Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. We're so excited to be joining you. We're here to talk about your dogs, your cats, and maybe even some small critters. Anything you've got a question?
We've got answers for all of it.
The Marty and Laura Show is brought to you by Veterinary Village. With locations throughout Wisconsin, Veterinary Village is dedicated to enhancing the quality of animal and human lives today and into the future.
Welcome. Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. Hey, you guys. How you doing, Marty?
I'm great. Thank you.
Excellent. We are so excited to have you here with us. Marty and I are together on our usual Sunday evening meetup. We, unbeknownst to each other, wore blue on the same day. So if you're in the YouTube, you can check out our matching outfits. But we are going to talk about why your elderly geriatric cat is skinny.
Yeah, because it's really common. So many people...
We're going to stipulate, I know nothing about cats, so this is all you, Marty.
Okay, well, you can just ask a few questions.
Yes.
We'll muddle through this.
Excellent.
So lots of people know when they have a kitten that they need veterinary care. They need vaccinations. They need deworming. They need to be spayed or neutered, all the stuff. And then a lot of cats never see their veterinarian until they're 14, 15, 16 years old, in some cases 20. And you suddenly look at your cat one day, or your friend or your family comes over and looks at the cat and says, what happened to your cat? Because they kind of shriveled up and they got really old and skinny.
Is that like when we get old and shrivel up? I mean,
kinda. Yeah. There's a geriatric syndrome that goes with this.
Okay.
So first of all, you need to take your cat to the veterinarian at least once a year, if not more often, for routine veterinary care. They need an exam. As they become older, they need blood work. They may need booster vaccinations. They don't need the same vaccinations as dogs every year. But, you know, if they're living in your house, your apartment, they're not going out, they're not seeing other cats, they have a fairly isolated lifestyle. But that doesn't mean that they don't need veterinary care. You should have them seen by your veterinarian, have them checked out, listen to their heart, feel their abdomen, feel their thyroid, check their teeth, do all the stuff. So you should be doing it. But a lot of people don't, because the cat is just sort of there, lives in their house, or their cats, one or more. They quietly live in the house. You don't really notice anything is wrong with them. And then suddenly one day.
Furry houseplant, isn't it? Like
yeah,
a furry.
Well, they're a little more interactive than a houseplant. I love cats. I think cats are amazing. And I swear I will never have a single cat. I always think cats should be raised in groups. But that's another conversation, at least two. Anyway, once you suddenly look at the cat and realize that they used to be 18 pounds and now they're six.
Oh my goodness.
That's not an unusual presentation.
Really?
Yeah, really. And it happens so gradually. It's sort of before your eyes, but you didn't really notice because they were just humming along and they eat and they drink and you fill the water bowl and you fill the food dish and you empty the litter box and everything is good. And suddenly one day you pick up the cat and realize you threw it over your shoulder because it used to weigh 18 pounds and now it doesn't.
It's a rack of bones. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you could cut cheese with some of these cats. They become so slender, like they're just like a little wire. So I want to emphasize to people, don't wait until your cat is 18 years old and lost 2/3 of their body weight. As soon as your cat starts to reach the last 1/3 of its life expectancy, so it's 2/3 of its way through what you expect it to live, and we can see cats that live to be 18 or 20 years old, but once they get to be 10, 12, 14 years old, somewhere in that range, they should start having annual blood work and urine testing with your veterinarian so that you can do early detection of some of these diseases, because three of the diseases that we see in old cats that make them old and skinny have very good treatments. But we have to know that they have a diagnosis and they need a treatment plan.
Got it. So what are the things that cause your cat to get skinny when it's old?
Four most common.
Okay.
One, diabetes.
Okay.
Two, kidney failure. Three, hyperthyroidism. And four, cancer. Now, cancer is always bad. There's no good kind of cancer. There's some that are badder than others. Mm-hmm. But cancer is not the most common. And that's what I think a lot of people are afraid of, is that they see the cat losing weight, deteriorating. And they aren't moving the same way as they used to. They're starting to, you know, lose body condition, lose interest in food, all those things. And cancer is a bad disease. But there are three good diseases that we have that we can manage really well in your cats.
Well, I don't think
if you bring them in.
Diabetes is good, but it's manageable.
It's manageable. And we used to, until fairly recently, we used to have one way to treat diabetic cats, and that was insulin injections, preferably twice a day, not preferably once a day. But there are now two oral medications on the market that treat diabetes in cats. So they're fairly new to market. They've only been out 2 or 3 years. So they're relatively new, and they do have some restrictions. The cat should be under 13. It shouldn't have comorbidities, which of course, all the cats that are over 13 have a comorbidity because they have something else wrong with them, heart disease, kidney disease, whatever. But there are certainly cats that can do very, very well on the oral medications, and they're very effective. They're given once a day. They're a little tablet or a little bit of a liquid. And so you give it to the cat and you can manage their diabetes. And that's really pretty cool breakthrough.
Yeah.
Because in dogs, diabetic dogs always have to be treated with insulin. There is no oral hypoglycemic agent for dogs because all dogs have the equivalent of humans with type 1 diabetes, not type 2. So type 1 is usually the young onset that requires insulin. Type 2 is the kind that you can use oral hypoglycemic agents. And there's a whole bunch of new things on the market. I'm not going to go down the human path because that's what we're talking about. So dogs always need insulin, but cats don't always need insulin. Some do. And some cats are transiently diabetic, which is kind of like hard for your head to understand. That means they're diabetic for a while. And if you put them on the right kind of insulin, the right kind of oral medications, some of them revert back to a normal status. We have a cat at our clinic in Sun Prairie that Dr. Johnson took in, put one of those monitors on the cat, you know, those little glucose monitors. You can adhere those to little kitties, little doggies, and it monitors
just like
their glucose.
Just like the glucose monitors we wear?
Just like the one that goes to your phone and says, here you go. You look, your glucose is too low. It's very cool. So you can put them on. They have to be replaced fairly often because, well, they have hair and it grows back and, you know, all the stuff. But anyway, you can manage some of these diabetic cats with glargine, which is an insulin that can turn them not diabetic. You can manage them with the oral hypoglycemic agents. You can manage them with diet. So there's some definitely really good things that happen with diabetic cats that we didn't have 5 years ago. So just because your cat is diabetic doesn't mean that this is a disaster for you. It means get veterinary care sooner rather than later, before the cat becomes ketotic, before the cat goes into DKA, diabetic ketoacidosis, before the cat needs to be in the hospital, before it costs you a gajillion dollars, go in. If your cat's drinking too much, urinating too much, like the litter box is floating around in your bathroom, it's a problem. Go get your cat diagnosed before it becomes a crisis. Don't wait.
Okay. So diabetes, what was the next one? Kidney failure. Associated with or not necessarily with the diabetes?
No. In fact, it's really interesting because dogs and cats don't have the loss of vision, the loss of kidney function, and the loss of toes that we see in humans that are diabetic.
Interesting.
And we don't really completely understand why, other than the fact that your cat may only live 5 years with its diabetes because it gets it when it's 10 or 12. So it's only going to have a life expectancy of 15 to 17 years. And humans, when they're diabetic, can have a life expectancy of 40, 50, 60 years. So it makes a big difference in the circulatory changes that happen. We just don't see them in dogs and cats. So their toes aren't going to fall off. They're not going to go blind from the diabetes. They may go blind from cataracts.
Sure.
And dogs develop cataracts with their diabetes. Almost every dog on the planet that's diabetic ends up with cataracts, but cats don't. Yeah, cats don't. Cats are their own little beings. They are not small dogs, folks.
Fascinating.
I know.
Okay.
Yeah, no matter how carefully you manage your diabetic dog, they're almost guaranteed to have cataracts. But cats do not usually get cataracts. So it's very cool. All so they don't lose their toes, they don't lose their vision, and they don't lose their kidneys. So they're completely separate.
Kidney failure is separate if you're seeing that in your cat.
It is. It is. It's usually in elderly cats, although we can occasionally see it in a younger cat. And again, they urinate too much, they drink too much, and they eat a lot in spite of the fact that they're still losing weight. So we can see these things going on. So again, you want to go in and get your cat diagnosed and treated. Mm-hmm. And a lot of cats with kidney failure, unlike dogs in kidney failure, will live for 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 years with the right management, with the right diet, with the right fluid therapy, with the right blood pressure medication, all the stuff. We can see cats living a very long time and very successfully with their kidney failure. So dogs that go into kidney failure usually have a fairly short timeline. Cats, not so much. Cats are tough little creatures.
Cats have nine lives.
They do. And so if you get your cat on the right food, if you get them on their sub-Q fluids, you get their blood pressure under control, if they have any kind of an infection that would be causing the kidney failure, like pyelonephritis, which is an infection in the kidneys, there's a lot of things we can do for our kidney failure cats that they can live for years with some intervention, but without major expense, without major intervention. And if there is a species on the planet that could have a kidney transplant besides a human, it's a cat.
Okay, wait. Somebody's
There
going to
are
do a kidney
people.
transplant on a cat.
Yes, there are clients that will have kidney transplants in cats, and they have been worked on and they're pretty successful. They don't work in dogs, but they do in cats. So the general rule of thumb, if you decide to do a kidney transplant on your cat, is they take a donor cat from the shelter that has a match, a tissue match, and then you are responsible for also living with that cat. So if you take one cat's kidney to give to your cat, you also get the cat. Like it's part of the package. Here's the kidney, here's the cat. You get two cats now for the price of one.
I mean, speechless. This might be
Well,
a mind blown. Of course, it's a lot easier to blow my mind up when it comes to cats, but wow. Kidney
you can't make this
transplants
stuff.
in cats.
You can't make this up.
Guys, listeners, seriously, kidney transplants in cats. That is actually hella cool. I mean, really. Really, just the sciencey, nerdy part of it, that's really cool.
It is cool. And a lot of cats do very, very well with a diet change. And so I know I have a lot of people that say, well, I don't want to change my cat's food. She only likes junk food out of a can, or she only likes this kind of dry kibble. And it can be hard to get a diet change done in a cat. So from little on, I recommend that you give your cat a variety of foods. Some cats only like poultry, some cats only like fish. From little on, start introducing them to all kinds of interesting kinds of food so that they are not just stuck on one kind of food. Because down the road, when your cat is 16 years old and it needs to learn to eat a prescription diet, it's a lot more of a challenge to do that if the cat has
Right.
not had a variety of food. So I recommend that you try different kinds of cat food. I recommend that you teach your cat to eat chicken baby food or anchovy paste, the stuff that comes in the tube that's on the shelf next to the tuna and the salmon and tuna and just a variety of things, so that when you get to the point in your cat's life that they need to be medicated, you don't end up at the emergency room. Because if you go online, there's some
You
pretty funny memes.
yourself, not the
Yeah,
cat.
there's some pretty funny memes of what happens when you try to medicate the cat, because cats don't medicate well. So get them used to a variety of things so that when you do need to give them gabapentin so that they're relaxed when they go to the vet, or you put them on blood pressure medication or the oral diabetes medication or whatever your cat may end up having
Do
to
you
have.
teach cats to take treats out of your hand like we have pill pockets for the dogs?
And a lot of people don't do that. They never think about it. It doesn't seem important when they're kittens. And then one day they turn into an old cat, and it is important. So plan ahead, kind of get your cat ready for those things. Anchovy paste, great product. It's in the, that little part of this grocery store, like it's this wide that has the canned tuna and the canned salmon and like the little pouches of tuna.
Sardines.
Yeah. Like millennials don't even own can openers. That's what I've been told. I don't understand. But I mean, I don't open a lot of cans, but I do own a can
I
opener. I
open
do know how
cans.
to use one. Yeah, it's a good thing. But
But the
the
anchovy
anchovy
paste
paste,
is usually in a tube. Like you use it if you're going to
yeah.
make a Caesar dressing, like a
Right.
really
It comes in a
authentic
tube.
Caesar dressing.
Right. Because you need anchovy paste for that. And it's either usually on the very, very top shelf or the very, very bottom shelf in the section that's this big with the tuna in it. And it doesn't matter if you go to the grocery store or the dollar store or Walmart or whatever, it's a department this wide.
Got it.
So look high, look low, grab the anchovy paste, go home, teach your cat to like it, or chicken baby food. And I mean just plain chicken, not like chicken and vegetable, just plain old chicken. So that if you get to the point, when you get to the point in your cat's life, because if you're lucky, your cat will live to be old enough to need medication, your cat looks at the chicken baby food or the anchovy paste and goes, yum, instead of, no, I'm not going to take anything because I'm a cat and it's against my will and I'm only going to let things go one direction out of my body and it's toward you. It's not down the hatch. So teach your kittens when they're little to take these things so that
Take
you have a
food from your
fallback.
hand so that you can give them a treat that
Yes.
has the thing in it. Okay, got it.
So, kidney failure, very important that you teach your cat to eat different kinds of food.
Got it.
And there's really great evidence that the kidney diets on the market, Hill's, Royal Canin, and Purina, have excellent outcomes when you feed those for kidney diseases in the cat, if your cat has kidney disease. And some of the diets now also have other components, like the diets may also have something for joint supplements, because old cats also have creaky joints. So a lot of these foods are now combination foods, but there's strong evidence that these increase life expectancy in the cat when you can get them to eat them by several years. It is very impressive how much time you get with the sub-Q fluids, with the diet change, with the medications. So, you know, don't hesitate to teach your cat to do these things. Sub-Q fluids, they're the same thing that we give to our dogs when they're sick. We send them home with clients. We teach clients how to use them. There's YouTube videos. Sub-Q, there's all kinds of
fluids in a cat.
Yeah, and they work beautifully. They can extend the cat's life expectancy literally by years, by two or three times a week for 10 minutes, giving your cat fluids. So if your cat is diagnosed with kidney failure, talk to your veterinarian, go online, you know, watch the YouTube videos, learn how to use them, learn how to put the venous set into the bag and how to put the needle into the cat and all the stuff, because you can literally buy your cat years of life by using the diet, the sub-Q fluids, and the medications prescribed.
Fascinating.
Doggett simplifies the puppy buying journey by connecting families with the perfect breed and responsible, health-verified breeders. They are the only breeder marketplace that verifies health clearances and responsible breeding practices. Through their personalized puppy matcher tool and matchmaker services, they educate and guide buyers every step of the way, ensuring a seamless process and a perfect match for their lifestyle. From initial breed consultation to introductions with top breeders, Doggett makes responsible puppy ownership easy and stress-free.
Okay. Diabetes, kidney failure. What was the third one you told me?
Hyperthyroidism, one of my favorite diseases.
Which is just crazy, because dogs have hypothyroid.
Yes.
I have cats, hypothyroid. Cats do not have hyperthyroid.
No, cats do not get hypothyroid. Dogs almost never become hyperthyroid. I've actually got two dogs that I've diagnosed as hyperthyroid in 44 years. Wow. Cats, we diagnose them all the time. It's almost never seen to see a hyperthyroid dog, but cats frequently are hyperthyroid. So their thyroid gland develops an adenoma, which is a benign growth, and their thyroid gland is in the neck. And sometimes you can actually feel it if the cat has an enlarged thyroid. And they will, again, lose weight, eat ravenously, maybe drinking, maybe not drinking excessive amounts of water, depending on the cat. So when I have an old skinny cat that comes in, I say to them, we have four good diseases: kidney failure, diabetes, hyperthyroidism, and cancer, which is a bad disease. So hyperthyroidism, love hyperthyroidism. It was first diagnosed in the 1980s in cats. So this is a relatively new disease. I mean, in the 70s, nobody knew that there was hyperthyroidism in cats. So somewhere in 1980, 1981, it became a diagnosis. And we don't really know why cats before that probably weren't hyperthyroid, if it's diet, if it's environment, we don't really know. But anyway, they develop a benign growth on their thyroid gland, which is in their neck. If you slide your fingers down the cat's neck, you can oftentimes feel the thyroid. Now, the cat I saw on Friday said, no, you're not touching my neck. No, you're not going to have an easy time checking me out. But these cats come in skinny, older, usually over age 12, but it can be younger. And they've lost a lot of weight. They eat ravenously because their thyroid is chugging up the thyroid hormone. Right. And it's just a going along, and the cat's very, very active, very busy in your house. For a 14-year-old cat, you're like, why is this cat so active? And then you take them in and you realize that they have a thyroid problem. So their heart races, they can develop a heart murmur. They end up with high heart rates. Mm-hmm. It's actually called thyroid toxicosis. Like, it's so high a level, it's toxic to their heart. And then they develop a heart problem. But if you manage their thyroid disease, their heart problem typically will either improve completely or improve considerably. So it's secondary. So these cats have a high thyroid level, a high T4, and we have four good treatments for this. Back in the day that this was first diagnosed in the 80s, we used to just take these cats to surgery and remove the thyroid gland. Well, there were some risks with that, and that's usually not the course of action anymore. But there is a diet made by Hill's. Hill's is the only company that makes this food, called YD for thyroid. They name all their diets based on the letter of the alphabet. So HD is heart diet, and ID is intestinal diet. ZD is the hydrolyzed protein. They ran out of letters. But YD is thyroid diet. because they already had a TD, which is for teeth. So YD, if you feed it 100% of the time, like no other food ever passes your cat's lips, it does a magnificent job of managing thyroid disease. If that doesn't work for you because you can't feed the cat that, or because grandma forgets and she's living with you and she's feeding the cat out of her ice cream bowl or whatever, you can't use that. There are medications that work really well. It's methimazole, which is going to suppress the amount of thyroid that the cat is making. It can be given as an oral medication or as a gel inside the ear because cats are hard to medicate. Did we mention cats are hard to medicate?
They are.
So you get a gel from the compounding pharmacy. You put it inside the cat's ear. You do it in the morning in one ear and the evening in the other ear. Blah, blah, blah. You go on your way. The cat's thyroid levels drop. Or there is an iodine.
I want that for our medicine.
I know. Wouldn't that be easy? And then there's iodine 131 treatment. Right. So the thyroid gland produces thyroid hormone, but it requires iodine to produce it. So if we treat the cats with iodine 131, which is a radioactive iodine, they give them an injection, they put them in the hospital. It basically suppresses the thyroid function. That was a very popular way to treat cats with hyperthyroidism until COVID. And then during COVID, nobody worked in the hospital and nobody did these cats anymore. And so I don't even know how many places are still doing iodine 131 treatment, but it is something to discuss with your vet if you have a hyperthyroid cat. But the methimazole pills, the methimazole gel, or the YD diet are kind of the most common ways to treat. And because we have these really good treatments for cats that are hyperthyroid and that it controls their heart disease that was secondary to the thyroid problem, these cats do fabulously. I have used these diets and I've used these medications for years. Like, it's really cool. Like, I do a little happy dance when an old skinny cat comes in and it's a thyroid problem. I'm like, yes, I can treat this.
We can fix this. Yay.
You know, if your cat is old and skinny, let's pick thyroid disease as our first choice.
Yeah.
Because it's the easiest and has the best life expectancy for your cat. So that's old skinny cats, except for cancer.
I have a question for you, though. Mm-hmm. It sounds to me as if you are giving an indication that cats... much less common to see cancer in cats than in dogs.
Absolutely.
And I'm now off on a site. Like, my brain has been worrying on this since the very beginning of the conversation. 15 minutes of nodding yes at you and thinking about this.
Oh, no. You haven't listened to a thing I've said.
No, I have not listened to a thing. No, I did. I had diabetes and kidney failure and hyperthyroid. But I want to know why. Why is it that cats have less cancer than dogs?
I don't know.
What is up with that?
Well, for one thing, they're mostly outcrosses. So that may be part of it. We just don't have as many breeds of cats as we see breeds of dogs. For another, I mean, I don't really know. We do see cancer in cats. Don't get me wrong. We can see mammary cancer. We can see lymph node cancer. Frequently in cats, if they have cancer, it's related to leukemia, feline leukemia, which is a virus. And we don't see viral causes of cancer in dogs, at least not that we know of. We don't see much of it in humans. There are causes of cancer in cows and in cats that are viral. So it's a little weird, but we don't really have a good answer. So I think it's a great question.
So I want to know, is it that we just don't know that there are viral causes for cancers in other creatures? Or is it just those are the only two creatures that get cancer that has a viral cause?
I think the scientists and the physicians and the veterinarians have looked for many years and we just haven't found a viral cause. Mm-hmm. So in cats, there's a feline leukemia virus. In cattle, there's a bovine leukosis virus. Mm-hmm. And to my knowledge, there hasn't been a viral cause of cancer in humans, although there's some discussion about rickettsial diseases that may cause cancer.
I was just coming to that. I know that I've talked to the AKC Canine Health Foundation about that. Mm-hmm. And so I'm assuming that that work is ongoing because I haven't heard.
Oh yeah.
Giant breakthrough.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So there's definitely a difference. And yes, we do see cancer in cats, but not as frequently. So a lot of people come in with their cats and they say, well, I think her tooth is bad. I think that's why she's not eating. And the answer is no. My radiologist, the one that comes to my practice on a regular basis, says cats and dogs do not stop eating because their mouth hurts. Mm-hmm. So do not assume that it's just a bad tooth. If your cat is losing weight, it's old, it's skinny. Well, if your dog too, I mean, I don't want to just talk about cats, but if there's weight loss, your cat, your dog is old, skinny, and losing weight, there's a diagnosis that needs to be attached to that. Age is not a disease. oh, he's just old, is not a diagnosis. So go into your vet, get an answer, find out what's going on, and then make a well-informed decision about what your best treatment options are. In dogs, we don't have this many old dog diseases that have good outcomes as we do in cats. So if you have an old skinny cat, trot into the vet. Don't wait till you're in an emergency, you know, situation. Trot into your vet, pay for the lab work, put your cat in the carrier before the appointment so their bladder is full, because we need a full bladder to get a urine sample. And urine is every bit as important as blood. So we usually do an ultrasound guided needle aspiration from the bladder called cystocentesis. Do it all the time. Do it many times a day. Very safe, very effective. And then we can get urine and blood on the cat or dog and make a diagnosis, get lab testing done, get you a diagnosis. And then once you have a diagnosis, you have a treatment plan. Right. Saying, well, I don't know, he's just old and skinny, is not a diagnosis.
So next question, completely know nothing about cats. Do people not take cats to the vet? Okay, you told me it's not because they're a furry houseplant. Is it because the cats don't like to travel so much? Is it people are worried about putting their cat in a carrier? I don't understand why it is that cats don't go to the veterinarian the way dogs do.
Well, that's part of it. Part of it is people's perception. I think they just don't think they need to go in because they're healthy. They seem fine. They didn't really notice anything was wrong. Cats are really good at hiding their disease. So until they can't breathe, they're down to their last alveolus or they're down to their last ounce of body weight, they just don't tell you they're sick. They're cats. Like, they just don't tell you.
I'm good.
That's part of it. Part of it is that, yes, cats hate riding in the car. People hate putting their cat in a carrier. Cats hate going in the carrier. Cats hate coming to the vet. And honestly, some veterinarians are not happy to see cats because cats are angry when they get there. So before you go to the vet, either get your cat used to the carrier with some practice, take him for a ride in the car, or talk to your veterinarian about sending home gabapentin that you can give to your cat the night before the appointment and the morning of the appointment. So two doses, usually 100 milligrams is enough, but sometimes a bigger cat needs a little bit more. And then they come in like a furry rug, and they're much easier for us to manage at the veterinary clinic because now we can get blood, we can get urine, and we don't lose body parts on our staff and ourselves to the cat that's angry.
Yeah. Wish I had known that back in the day when I was doing professional pet grooming and everyone else that worked in the shop was allergic to cats. So
yeah, they were sure allergic.
They were sure allergic. And so that left the low man on the totem pole, moi, to do all of the, cat's ass shaving, because that's what typically the cats would come for, was to be brushed and to
hygiene
on their potty areas and, you know, the
hygiene. But I will tell you that when a cat comes in the clinic and it's angry, I am very glad cats come as 16-pound animals, not the size of Rottweilers, because if cats came in, I mean, there are bobcats, there are cats that big, but they don't live in our homes.
No.
If your cat weighed 90 pounds and it was as angry as it is when it weighs 16 pounds, veterinarians would all refuse to see
they
cats. Because
they'd be zookeepers. See, that's what that is.
Exactly.
That's big cats. We deal with those at the zoo.
Exactly. Because an angry cat is just an angry cat. And they can go from 0 to 60 really fast.
Yes.
Dogs kind of ramp up a little bit. Cats just
usually
blow up. And it's bad when they blow up. It is dangerous to be in the room with an angry cat.
Cat scratch fever is a real thing, kids.
It is. It's not just a song. It's a real thing.
It's a real thing.
And I've seen cats hanging off of picture frames by one toenail or doorknobs by one toenail. It is unpleasant.
Have
so
I ever
please
told the story of the groom shop that I worked at when I was in college, like when I was still working in college? And the groom shop owner was a dog person, but she boarded cats. And she had a policy that all the board dogs would go home bathed. Well, she was trying to bathe this Siamese cat. And the cat got away from her, got up behind the bathtub, like it was one that was separate from the wall.
Yeah.
And she put her arm up there to get that cat, and she was in the hospital. That cat sliced her, big old Siamese cat, sliced her across the forearm through all the tendons, like severed.
Yeah.
It is dangerous.
I really like cats, but there are some cats who really don't like veterinarians. So don't tell your veterinarian, oh, she'll be fine. She never bites. Yeah, that's a guarantee that there's something going to go wrong. So please talk to your veterinarian about getting the gabapentin ahead of time, getting them sedated if the gabapentin's not enough. Mm-hmm. And don't give your vet a hard time about it. You know, don't say, oh, she's such a good cat. Yeah, they're great at home, but not when they get under a stressful situation. So please allow your veterinarian, if it's necessary, to give some sedation to your cat so that they can do an excellent exam and an excellent job getting blood and urine from them, because you can't make a diagnosis without putting your hands on the cat and without getting blood and urine. And it shouldn't be the veterinarian or the vet tech's blood. It should be the cat's blood.
Or I'm just going to pitch here, the groomer.
Yeah, that too.
You know.
Yeah. So
if I have to reach into a crate to get a cat with a welding glove on, we have a problem.
Yeah, most of the carriers come apart, and so there are ways that you can take them.
But when we're boarding them,
Yeah, they got to come out. So take the carrier apart, but please, please, please get your gabapentin ahead of time, and don't insist that your veterinarian is, oh, you're just afraid of cats. No, I'm afraid of really dangerous cats. I love cats, don't get me wrong. They're awesome. But when they're unhappy,
I think that's the problem, is the owners just don't see them in the environment. So we are not wanting to scare you for your cat. We are only just wanting you to understand that kitty at home and kitty elsewhere are not the same kitty.
No, they are Jekyll and Hyde. And it's not the cat's fault either. It's just that's how they deal with stress. So, you know, we work really hard at our practice, and a lot of practices do, to do that feline friendly kind of stuff. There are feline friendly practices. They have separate waiting rooms. They have separate exam rooms. Yeah. They give treats, like the churro treats, not the crunchy Mexican
dessert.
It's churro that comes in a little tube, or chicken baby food, or anchovy paste, or something to the cat, so that when they come in as kittens, we can get them to eat something and get them kind of acclimated to a veterinary clinic. But if your cat hasn't been in for 16 years, they have forgotten that they liked that vet. The cats have good memories, but not that good.
I mean, okay. I mean, this is completely off the wall question. This is what happens when you have a dog person talking about cats. Do you socialize cats? Like, is that a thing?
Oh, yeah. Ian Dunbar used to talk about kitten kindergarten. So, yes, you can do socialization. Most places don't. But, yes, you can socialize your cat. And I think cats, and I've said this before, is that I think cats are better raised in cohorts, in pairs or more, because they're just happier and more social. They're just easier to get along with. Mm-hmm. Have people over to your house. Let them feed the cat little treats. They make temptations and all kinds of little treats for cats. So don't pretend that they're not interested in those things. They're not dogs, but you can do a lot of similar things that you do with dogs.
Fascinating. See, this is why I talk to Marty. I learn something every single time. Socializing your cat and kidney transplants. Okay. I'm stuck on that.
Sorry.
It's okay. No, it's good. This is why we have this podcast. We talk to the people. I promise, if I'm learning something, somebody else is learning something too. And so we're doing a good thing.
Good, good. And there are some great feline practitioners. Sometimes you can go to a clinic that just does felines. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean there aren't good practitioners that do all species. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to go to a feline practitioner. But if you feel like your veterinarian isn't addressing your needs, or you've advanced past the point that they can help you, then find a feline practitioner, find a feline friendly practice, find something, you know, fear free, something that can improve your cat's veterinary experience, and that they can actually get the samples that they need to, so that you can get a diagnosis. I think cats are amazing creatures, but they are not small dogs.
No, they are not. And they're not small humans.
No.
Okay. Well, this has been a fantastic episode. I appreciate your time, as always. Fabulous. And listeners, we will be back next week with another hot take. So just be looking for your drop on Wednesday. All right. Thanks, Marty.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Marty and Laura Show. We're excited to bring you these unique, fun, fact-based conversations about pet health. From pro tips on selecting your new dog, to what your cat's cough means and what you should do about it. We'll meet you wherever you are, in the car, on the treadmill, walking the dog, and we'll bring you a good laugh, a great story, and a bright idea every week. We hope you'll join us on social. Stop by the website to sign up for an extra tip of the week for your pet. While you're at it, do us a favor. please, and leave a review wherever you find your podcasts. The Marty and Laura Show is produced by Pure Dog Talk, Inc. Sound design and editing by Premium Audio Services.